Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 12th, 2024. Six Dead in String of Ojinaga Area Cartel Shootings by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Northeastern Chihuahua. The streets of Ojinaga and the nearby towns of Manuel Benavides and Coyame del Sotal have been quiet in the aftermath of a series of shootings this weekend that left six dead and one wounded. On Sunday, the body of Misael P. Longoria was discovered in a white Land Rover abandoned in a neighborhood on the southern fringe of the city. Jose Luis S.B., identified by last initials only, was found deceased in his truck in El Mulato. Rafael Olivas Cuevada and Jose Luis Rodriguez Benavides were also killed in shootings in Manuel Benavides, a small town about an hour outside of the city. At around 6:30 in the morning on Monday, two more men, who have not yet been identified by police, were discovered dead by apparent gunshot wounds on the stoop of a funeral parlor across from Lobby's Restaurant on the Boulevard Libre Comercio. Schools, government offices, and many businesses shuttered on Monday and Tuesday in the municipalities of Ojinaga, Manuel Benavides, and Coyame del Sotal. At press time, many locals are still sheltering in place while local and state authorities continue their investigation. Five vehicles were abandoned during the conflict, including two with Texas plates and an array of weapons and ammunition. The Presidio port of entry has remained open, though many transport services from Ojinaga to other destinations in Mexico have temporarily suspended operations. Folks on social media and elsewhere have speculated that the violence might be connected to Sergio Menchaca Pizarro, who was arrested in August of last year while walking by the side of FM 170 near Fort Leighton, just southeast of Presidio. Menchaca was a leader of La Línea, a criminal organization in the area known as the Ojinaga Triangle. In June, Menchaca pled guilty to an organized crime charge that carries a mandatory life sentence. The United States also seeks a $2 million payout from money Menchaca and his associates earned in the course of their criminal conspiracy. Over the past few years, La Línea, a splinter group of the Juarez cartel, has clashed with the Sinaloa cartel for command of smuggling routes through the area. On Monday, State Attorney General Cesar Valregui indicated that he did not think the Ojinaga murders were a continuation of the struggle between the two organizations. The confrontations are not about another criminal organization infiltrating the area, but rather about the members of the same group carrying out a purge, he told reporters in Chihuahua City. The unrest in Ojinaga comes at an unlucky time for Lucy Marufo Acosta, the newly elected mayor. City Hall changed hands according to schedule on Tuesday, but a public celebration planned for the city plaza was canceled due to safety concerns. While her inaugural speech did not explicitly address the shootings, Marufo called for her friends and neighbors to come together. "It will be in unity that we will regain calm and build peace," she said. National and state law enforcement agencies have since descended on Ojinaga. On Monday, a special convoy of forces from the National Guard, Secretariat of National Defense, SEDENA, and the Chihuahua State Police, some 300 officers strong, arrived in the border city. State Police Commander Luis Aguirre remained confident that his agency's presence was having a positive impact. All the security forces report that the area is calm, he said during a press conference in Chihuahua City on Monday. Work continues, and we will have to be reinforced with more personnel and more infrastructure in order to obtain more information and to be able to guarantee peace and security in the area. Steph photo by Sam Karras. El Cosmico's Liz Lambert and Jason Ballard examine a model home at the hotel's new location, underway off of Antelope Hill Road in Marfa. Lambert joined Ballard and other executives from Icon Build, which is 3D printing the structures, to give members of the media a first look at how the process works. Marfa City Council talks budget, El Cosmico expansion, by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, it's shaping up to be a relatively seamless 2024-25 budget cycle for the city of Marfa, with city council members, the mayor, city manager, and city department heads all agreeing on a balanced budget after just two meetings. In many ways, the new budget is similar to last year's. All city employees are receiving a 3.5% cost of living raise, and the big ticket item is $2.9 million in street repairs, funds rolled over from last year that City Manager Mandy Roan and Mayor Manny Baiza are confident will be spent this year with the right engineering firms in place. The city's utilities customers will see no increase in natural gas rates this year, but will be subject to an 8% increase in water and sewer fees and 4.5% increase in residential and commercial garbage collection. This year's proposed tax rate, which has gone through the public hearing process but is still pending formal adoption, is the voter approval rate, 0.328 per $100 taxable value, a 1.6% increase from last year's tax rate. Council members met for their second budget workshop last week, with all council members present. Marfa and Presidio County Museum Administrator Martha Stafford first addressed council members regarding budgetary needs. Stafford explained that the museum's front railing and porch required an estimated $1,200 worth of repairs, and heating and cooling systems in the back of the building are failing. But I'm hesitant to call anyone to come fix it because we simply do not have the funds to pay for it, especially if it's going to be a lot of money, Stafford said. The museum would also like to make updates to its exhibits, including the phone booth out front and its marketing brochures, she said. Stafford said the museum is now open 7 days a week from 1 to 5 p.m., and the thrift store was back to making a modest profit. Baiza said there is adequate money, $80,000 in historic building preservation, to take care of the museum's needed repairs, and upgrades to brochures shouldn't be a problem. The city recently stabilized a deteriorating adobe wall on the east side of the structure and is continuing repairs to the museum floor. Police Chief Gilberto Carrillo notified council members that planned upgrades to the EMS station to better suit 24/7 on-call staff are likely to displace old vehicles and Can-Am motorcycles the police department is storing in the bay. He said the animal control shelter might be a better site for the vehicles to be stored. Baiza suggested shipping containers as a cheap solution as opposed to a built-out shelter. A largely defunct police department bank account still had some money left in it from an old Operation Stone Garden grant that council members decided to put towards two shipping containers for a total budget of $19,500. Councilmember Mark Morrison asked whether there's anything in the public works budget relating to the new El Cosmico utility connection. While construction on a 3D-printed model hotel room and home has begun on El Cosmico's new 61-acre site north of Antelope Hills, developers are still in discussion with the city about hooking up to Marfa's water and wastewater systems. Roan said there is nothing in the budget relating to that project yet because it is still a big question mark with city employees, engineers, and El Cosmico exchanging data and assessing the potential impact. Hotelier Liz Lambert previously told the Sentinel El Cosmico would foot the bill for the city, expanding services to their area. "We don't even have an estimate of what that would cost, how that would be paid, what we would have to do up front, or what they would pay up front," Roan said. "We are working on it diligently, I promise. But once we have some better numbers, that's going to be such a huge thing that we're going to have to look at it, figure out how everything is going to line up." Roan said the extension is approximately 1.5 miles to the new El Cosmico's property line. Morrison estimated that there is a 40-foot grade change from the county road to the property line, and Biza pointed out that the development still needs to secure rights of way. With so many questions up in the air, Roan said progress is slow-going, but she is working with an attorney at the city's law firm, Bohorquez, which specializes in utilities, as well as Public Works Director Chuck Salgado, the city's engineers, and El Cosmico representatives to get the information they need. With few actual changes to any of the original budget's line items, council members anticipated adopting the budget and tax rate soon. Morrison said there doesn't seem like there's a whole bunch of questions, with Councilmember Travis Ackerman agreeing that it was essentially the same budget as last year, and they were in solid shape. The city's deadline to adopt the budget and tax rate is September 26th. To view a draft of the budget, visit cityofmarfa.com/administration/page/budget-reports. Cooperative Arts Spaces begin anew following fire. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine, Cooperative Arts Spaces, Catchlight Art Gallery, and Gallery on the Square have combined forces and reopened under a new name, Big Bend Gallery, in a new space following the destruction of the Memorial Day weekend fire on Holland Avenue. A ribbon-cutting ceremony was held this past weekend to celebrate the reopening in the historic 1911-built Lackey Hoard building located on the corner of Holland and 6th Streets next to the gallery's old locations. The gallery on the square and the work of its member artists on display were completely destroyed in the Holland Avenue fire. Catchlight Art Gallery was previously located directly next to the new Big Bend Gallery, also in the Lackey Hoard building, and did not suffer any damage from the fire. Jan Muller, president of the Big Bend Arts Council, which ran Gallery on the Square, and owner of Catchlight, said after the tragic fire it made sense to combine the two long-running entities into one gallery. The newly reopened Big Bend Gallery features the work of 35 different artists from all over the region, which is a lot of artists to have under one roof, Muller said, but we've been able to combine and not make it look crowded. We've got a great group of people who govern the gallery, she added. The space, which was previously restored, is well suited for a gallery with natural lighting, high ceilings, and advantageous storefront windows for displaying ceramics, stained glass, and paintings propped on easels. Large floating white panels define each artist's area. A custom tile threshold proclaiming Far West Texas, previously done by Gallery Director Amanda Calhoun, welcomes visitors as they step in. A sinuous strip of exposed brick, a reminder of the building's past, adds interest to gallery walls. Five jewelers will populate centrally located displays. "Everyone is happy to be open again," Muller said. "We brought some newer artists in, all the other artists together, so it's been really great." The Big Bend Arts Council began 20 years ago in 2004. Muller ran Catchlight out of the adjacent storefront in the Lackey Horde building for the past 16 years. That space is now vacant and available for rent. Artist members will continue to help offset payroll costs by manning the gallery, which takes 20% of artists' sales. A backspace previously utilized as offices will hold receptions and rotating exhibitions by Sol Ross art students and co-op members. Muller said the process of reopening has been healing for the artists that really lost a lot. The gallery on the square did not have insurance on its contents, meaning artists lost all of their work in the fire, amounting to thousands of dollars. The Arts Council received $12,500 from the Historic Alpine Fire Relief Fund, which raised a total of $62,600 for the affected businesses, as well as donations from other local fundraisers. 95% of all the funds in those fundraisers have gone to the artists for their losses, Muller said. The Texas Commission on the Arts also reached out to Muller in the wake of the fire, inviting Gallery of the Square to apply for a disaster grant, funds awarded that allowed the gallery to buy new displays, a costly necessity. "They were instrumental in our being able to purchase display items. All of our display items burned in the fire," Muller said. "You don't realize how many thousands of dollars, just tens of thousands, just went up in smoke." Several of the businesses destroyed by the fire are now back on their feet with the help of community support, only a few months after the devastating fire. Judy's Bread and Breakfast does not plan to reopen as far as Muller was aware, but Eva's Salon is back in business, having reopened at 106 West Sol Ross Avenue in the Old Town Square. La Azteca plans to reopen at Javelinas on Holland and Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things is seeking a new space. "So everybody's not rising from the ashes. We've already risen," Muller said. "We're back." The Big Bend Gallery, located at 121 West Holland Avenue, is open every day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. For more information, visit BigBendArtsCouncil.org. Jeff Davis Commissioners Hear Financial Status, by Janine Bishop for the Big Bend Sentinel. Fort Davis. Jeff Davis County Commissioners received an encouraging 2023 financial audit report Tuesday from CPA Preston Singleton of Singleton Clark & Associates. "Overall, things are looking good. The county continues to show improvement," he said. "The county treasurer's office has continued to improve processes and procedures in financial management over the past few years," he said. "The office is now current on audits and has enough reserves to cover a year and a half, an amount of $3.2 million, according to Singleton. The county's fiscal year ends September 30th. In other business before the court, Regional Public Defender James McDermott shared the new memorandum of understanding between his office and Jeff Davis County, noting that the county will pay 10% less for the coming year for indigent legal costs. McDermott, along with county judges from Jeff Davis, Hudspeth, Presidio, and Brewster counties, went before the Texas Indigent Defense Commission and successfully obtained an additional $170,000 in support for the five counties covered by the Public Defender's Office. Commissioners approved the agreement. County Attorney Glenn Eisen and Executive Director of the Fort Davis Chamber of Commerce, Pam Napin, successfully encouraged the county to approve spending $6,885 from hotel occupancy taxes, HOT funds, to purchase memberships in the Texas Hotel and Lodging Association for the 45 identified hoteliers in the county. These memberships will provide the businesses with free legal advice, access to seminars, a monthly newsletter, and promotion of their properties on three major statewide websites for Texas tourism. This is going to bring more heads in beds, Napin said. Eisen and Napin told the court that the county and Chamber of Commerce are actively ramping up promotion efforts to bring visitors to Jeff Davis County and are improving their financial processes and marketing efforts. Eisen reported that he is working to collect back HOT payments from eight delinquent accounts. Commissioners also breezed through several agenda items, including accepting new road names for the former High Frontier property, now being redeveloped by area hotelier Tim Crowley of Marfa as a resort and event space. The county also formally approved the 2024-2025 tax rate that was published and posted last month of 0.64359 per $100 valuation, an amount lower than the voter approval rate. Water Situation Improving in Candelaria by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Candelaria, the Candelaria public water supply, on which around 50 residents rely, is steadily improving following a period of destabilization spurred by the death of longtime manager Rosalva Madrid. Public water supply systems for Presidio County's most remote, sparsely populated communities, including Candelaria, Ruidosa, and Redford, were established in the 1990s, but have recently become the focus of a new entity, the Presidio County Utilities Systems Board, USB. The board was originally formed in the fall of 2023 in order to meet requirements of a $4.6 million Economically Distressed Areas Program, EDAP, grant the county received from the Texas Water Development Board. That grant will fund remediations to wastewater issues at Fort D.A. Russell, first-time water and wastewater services for East Heights in Marfa, planning and design of water services for Las Pampas, and a long-term solution to Shafter's ongoing water instability. This past July, representatives from each of the small communities, including Shafter, were appointed to the USB. Shortly after, the board went on a tour of all the public water supply systems to assess needs in the various communities. Candelaria has the biggest needs, said County Commissioner-elect and Board Chair Deirdre Hessler. They were having to go up and turn on and off their pump in order to get water to the houses in Candelaria. The pump that fills up the water storage tank, which then distributes water to customers, was not automatically turning on and off. It was done manually, which is not a very good way to do it, said Redford Public Water Supply Corporation President and member of the USB, Charlie Angel. The people lose water pressure as it got lower. In addition to the pump issues, Candelaria, which has long had residents on a boil water notice, is facing around $6,000 in fines from the Texas Center on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, and Environmental Protection Agency. They have a tremendous amount of findings from TCEQ and EPA, Hessler said. We want to jump on that immediately to stem the bleeding, basically. One of the findings includes higher than acceptable levels of arsenic. Mandatory monthly water samples, which are sent off for testing to a laboratory in Odessa that then reports results to TCEQ, have also not been taking place. As a stopgap measure towards getting Candelaria into compliance, the USB hired interim water operator Jimmy Avila, who is a certified water operator working for the city of Presidio, to make necessary repairs to the system and begin water testing. Avila is being paid to do the work for the next 6 months, thanks to a donation from Marfa resident Neil Chavigny. Angel said, thanks to Avila and Arrowhead Drilling, the issue with the pump has been resolved. The next task is to ensure that the chlorinator is working properly, he said. We're like 70% back to regular functioning status, Angel said. Wicker Cottom, a USB board member representing Ruidosa, is working towards obtaining his water operator certification so that he also can monitor wells. Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District Manager Trey Gerfers said the end goal is for the USB to hire two water operators to handle all four systems for Shafter, Ruidosa, Redford, and Candelaria, possibly taking on administrative tasks like billing. Hisler said the mess of Candelaria's public water supply system went beyond broken pumps and a lack of water testing. With only one living member left, a board for the water supply had to be reformed so that they could access their bank account and pay bills. The USB is also working with Water Finance Exchange to assess the public water supply's finances to ensure they are operating sustainably. The City of Presidio's decommissioned water meters, which are still operational, are being given to Candelaria and Ruidosa at no charge, so they can update meters to ensure they are getting accurate readings. Once we get all that done, Candelaria should be in great shape into the future, Hisler said. She said it is likely that water fees for Candelaria residents will increase in the future. Gerfers said, so far, the community-driven model of the USB is working well. This was the idea all along, to get these communities helping each other, working with each other, because they're all facing similar problems, Gerfers said. They're all very under-resourced, and so why not be helping each other? Hisler said the USB's work to ensure all county residents have safe drinking water is rewarding and agreed the board has come together in a simpatico way. Angel expressed gratitude towards Gerfers, Hisler, and Judge Joe Portillo for seeing the initiative through. Both Deirdre and Portillo, prior to being elected, they both said, if I get elected, can you help? And I said, absolutely, Angel said. I appreciate the fact that here you have two officials that, before they were even elected, made promises and they followed through with them. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 12th, 2024, obituaries. Tejada. Our beloved Mario Tejada passed away at the age of 58. He was born on January 19, 1966, to Camilo and Lorena P. Tejada. He was a devoted member of the Catholic Church. Mario attended St. Mary's Catholic School and graduated from Marfa High School in 1986. He took meticulous pride in repairing and maintaining anything from gardening to small engines and would always be there for anyone who needed his help. His hobbies included fishing, music, and was a herbalist in his own right. He had his theories of space and the unknown. He appreciated the friends who came around and visited, his nephews and nieces, whom he teased and loved to be around with, and his son, Elijah, whom he deeply loved and gave him encouragement and strength to carry on. We couldn't have asked for a better brother, uncle, cousin, father, and friend to those who knew him. His memory will live on in all of our hearts. Mario was preceded in death by his father, Camilo Tejada, and mother, Lorena P. Tejada. Survivors include his son, Elijah Tejada, brothers Jaime and Jose Antonio Tejada, sisters Maria de Lourdes Medrano, Ismael, and Teresa Adriana Mitchell, William, three nephews, three nieces, several cousins, an uncle and aunt, and many friends. A celebration of life for Mario Tejada was held on August 30th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marfa, Texas. Rosary was at 10 a.m., followed by Mass and a procession to Merced Cemetery. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at Mobile Mortician of Texas website, www.mmoftexas.com. With heartfelt gratitude, we would like to extend our deepest appreciation for the love and support you have shown us during this challenging time. Father Angel Alvarez, thank you for the beautiful Mass celebration in honor of our beloved brother Mario. To Lee, for all the support and care you have provided, we are truly grateful. Mrs. Vasquez, thank you for leading the rosary, and to Ismael Medrano, Joe Prieto, and friends, your comforting music was a blessing. A special thank you to Sarah Ontiveros, whose selfless generosity in our time of need was deeply appreciated. To our dear friends and family who donated food, helped at the luncheon, and to everyone who attended the services, your presence and kindness meant the world to us. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. With love, the family of Mario P. Tejada. Dominguez. Maria Antonia Tony Dominguez of Marfa passed away Wednesday, September 4th, after a long battle with cancer. She was born on April 16, 1945, to Crescencio and Hortensia Herrada of Marfa. She was the oldest of nine children. She attended Blackwell School as a child until the family moved to El Paso, Texas. She graduated from Bel Air High School and was a member of the National Honor Society. She married Manuel Dominguez on February 13, 1965, and moved back to Marfa. She worked at Vizcaino's department store for several years. Tony then went to work at St. Mary's Catholic School before going to Marfa ISD as a librarian. Tony and Manuel had two children, Aurora Hernandez, Tony, and Albert Dominguez, Lyra, both of Marfa. She had two grandchildren, Christopher Dominguez of Odessa and Coy Dominguez of San Antonio, along with five great-grandchildren. Tony loved family gatherings and dancing. Tony was best known for her unique one-finger wave. Tony was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Manuel, and a sister Mary, and brothers Federico, Ruben, Benny. She is survived by her children and brothers Joe, Pat, Baby, Lisa, Mondo, Bertha, and Sammy, Angie, all from El Paso, along with numerous nieces and nephews. Services will be held at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marfa, Texas, on Friday, September 13, 2024. The rosary will begin at 1 p.m. with a Mass to follow, beginning at 1:30 p.m. Burial will take place at Cementerio de la Merced in Marfa. Services have been entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine, Texas, and gifts and condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Peters. William Allen Peters passed away peacefully at his home in El Paso, Texas, on September 2, 2024. His family is deeply grateful for the precious 8 months they shared with him following his diagnosis of pancreatic cancer in January. William was born on October 3, 1940, in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, to Luke and Catherine Young Campbell Peters. He graduated from Garland High School and earned his business administration degree from Texas Tech University, where he met and married Sherry Kemp Peters, a native of Alpine, Texas. This year marked their 60th wedding anniversary. After graduation, Bill and Sherry moved to Dallas, where he began his career with General Electric. They transferred to Louisville, Kentucky, and then to Schenectady, New York, where Bill joined the corporate audit staff. He then transferred with GE to be a region manager of small appliances in Naperville, Illinois. He later moved to San Antonio, Texas, to open a private CPA practice for 8 years before he took a job at Alpine as the auditor and comptroller at Sulross State University. He closed his career at the University of Texas at El Paso, where he was the director of audit for 14 years before retiring at 75. His career in financial auditing required a high level of integrity and honesty, which flowed into every part of his life and the way he led his family. William also shared his financial acumen and spirit of service with his church and the Lions Club. In recent years, William embraced new passions, including woodworking, spending time at the shooting range, collecting ball caps from his travels, reading Bible devotionals, and savoring huevos rancheros for breakfast. He leaves behind a legacy of strong work ethic, faith in Jesus, and a reminder to savor life's simple pleasures, including a good steak, hummingbirds, gooey cinnamon rolls, cowboy art, and the sunset view from his home. William is survived by his wife, Sherry, his 2 daughters, Elizabeth Peters and Emily Kunal, son-in-law Benjamin Kunal, and his grandchildren, Hezekiah and Adeline. William also lovingly supported 6 foster children as a temporary grandfather. A graveside memorial service was held at Elm Grove Cemetery in Alpine on September 5th at 10:30 a.m. A celebration of William's life will be held on Saturday, September 7th at his home in El Paso at 10:30 a.m. Stuart. Hallian Hart Stuart, a cherished soul whose warmth and kindness brightened the lives of many, passed away on September 8, 2024, in Terlingua, Texas, at the age of 64. Born on January 24, 1960, in the vibrant city of Austin, Texas, Hallian's life was a testament to love, compassion, and unwavering devotion. Throughout her years, Hallian dedicated herself to the noble profession of child care, touching the hearts of countless families as she helped raise and care for many babies. Her nurturing spirit was matched only by her heartfelt commitment as a proud wife, mother, and beloved Mimi. She found joy in the simple act of guiding the young and bringing joy to their lives, leaving a profound impact on those fortunate enough to know her work. A devoted Christian woman, Hallian's life was deeply rooted in her faith as she passionately shared the love of Jesus with all whom she encountered. Beyond her vocational calling, she embraced hobbies that brought her fulfillment and happiness. Her collection of treasures reflects her keen eye for beauty, while her love for adventure was evident as she rode her own motorcycle, embodying a spirit of freedom and joy. Hallian is survived by her loving spouse, Richard Stewart, with whom she cherished 40 years of unwavering commitment and partnership. Together, they built a loving home filled with laughter and support. She leaves behind her daughter, Shannon Stewart Gutowski, and her treasured son and daughter-in-law, Jonathan and Brittany Stewart. Hallian was especially proud of her grandchildren, Joy Blackburn, Nicholas Gutowski, and Hallie Stewart, to whom she imparted her boundless love and wisdom. Preceding her in death were her father, Howard Hart, her mother, Ramona Jo Cadell, her stepfather, Herman Lee Cadell, and her aunt, Ida Holden. Hallian will be greatly missed by those that love her, but our faith affirms that we will be together again in heaven. Services have been entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine, Texas, and gifts and condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, August 22nd. Major electricity producing plant possibility for Ward County. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Competitive Power Ventures Group, also known as CPV Group, who is a leading developer, owner, and operator of utility-scale renewable and low-emission electricity generation plant, has been looking into the possibility of building a major power-producing plant in Western Ward County, which will use domestically available natural gas and renewable power technologies to run the plant. The 327-acre proposed site will be located 6 miles northeast of Barstow. CPV Group has been negotiating with Ward County to reach an agreement on tax abatement rates concerning the construction of the electricity-producing power plant. An abatement is a tax break offered by a state or municipality on certain types of real estate or business opportunities. A real estate tax abatement may reduce a home's property taxes for a period of time or may grant tax breaks to businesses. The purpose of an abatement is to encourage development or economic activity within a city or community. Governments may also offer abatements to prevent industries with high employment from leaving the community. Most abatements expire after a predetermined number of years, at which point taxes return to their ordinary level. CPV's manager-developer, Tom Rollo, was at the August 13th regular commissioners meeting to discuss the abatement with the court. Quote, "We are here to give the commissioners and visitors an overview of this project. We have not yet purchased the 327-acre tract, but we have rights of purchase if the financial outlook is feasible for a profitable financial future. We are looking at this area because of the natural gas availability. The plant would require amounts of natural gas to power the turbines. To put the daily projected 1,350 megawatt hours into perspective, that amount would power 850,000 Texas homes," Rollo said. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, "I negotiated with them until we came to an agreement that benefited both sides. They were originally asking for a 100% abatement, but that would not have been fair to our county taxpayers. We came to an agreement for them to be granted a 40% tax break for 10 years. This would go into effect upon construction completion of the plant and continue for the first 10 years of operation. After 10 years, CPV would pay the full county tax rate per $100 of property evaluation. We will get the county taxes, and Pecos Barstow Toya ISD will receive the school taxes," end quote. The projected economic benefits laid out by CPV shows an approximately $3 billion capital investment and over $140 million in property tax revenues to the county during the abatement period of 10 years. The project would create almost 5,300 county jobs, 4,072 direct jobs during the four-year construction period, along with 1,127 indirect jobs during the construction phase. After completion, the plant will employ 47 direct jobs and 46 indirect jobs over a 35-year period. CPV projects over $3.2 billion in wages and benefits that will be brought into the area during construction and for the projected 35 years of operation. During the four-year construction phase, direct job wages would amount to $1,465,748,000, along with $352 million for indirect jobs. When finished, the project would be a 1,350-megawatt natural gas power plant. It would provide a large in-basin demand for regionally produced associated natural gas, the export of which is currently constrained by a lack of export pipelines. The natural gas would be burned in state-of-the-art combined cycle gas turbines, or CCGTs, to generate power. This power would go to the Texas grid to meet the increasing demands of regional oil and gas producers and bolster the resiliency of the Texas grid. A carbon capture system, or CCCS, would capture CO2 from the CCGT's exhaust for use in enhanced oil recovery, supporting regional production of oil and gas. According to CPV's project summary, the major components will be a power island consisting of two trains of GE's latest generation air-cooled 7HA.03 combined cycle gas turbines. The capture island, which is a mine solvent-based technology to capture, condition, and compress up to 95% of the plant's CO2 emissions at 4.4 million metric tons per year. The switchyard facility would produce 30,000 megawatt hours of power each day on average. This power would supply Oncor's 345 kV Riverton Sand Lake circuit via a new switchyard. The facility would connect to multiple natural gas pipelines and provide an in-basin demand for up to 240,000 DTH per day, or decatherm is a unit of energy used in the natural gas industry to measure the actual heating value of a specific volume of natural gas. The facility would sell captured CO2 to regional producers in the Permian Basin for use in enhanced oil recovery. The power island would be air-cooled, relying on very little water as makeup in the cooling cycle. The capture island will be sur-cooled and use water created in the combustion process. Wastewater will be evaporated on-site, zero liquid discharge. Storm waters would be redirected to collection basins to prevent runoff and erosion. The facility would be expected to operate under baseload conditions, only shutting down for periodic maintenance as required. The abatement agreement is just one part of the project's investment decision. The CPV project also hinges on meeting financial requirements for CPV, its investors, and shareholders. CPV's other contributing factors to the project becoming a reality is the ability to meet site and operational requirements, electrical, gas interconnections, permits, etc., projected long-term success, accuracy, and predictability of future expenses and revenues, as well as business friendliness of siting location, town, county, and state. Competitive power ventures have energy-producing plant sites operating heavily throughout the northeastern states. the Ward County project would be CPV's fourth natural gas power plant, joining one in Ohio, one in West Virginia, and one in Michigan. MEDC moves on purchased Main Street property, sets sights on third property. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. In a continued effort to obtain property along the Main Street through Monahans when available, the Monahans Economic Development Corporation, or MEDC, board members met in executive session at the end of Monday's regular meeting to discuss purchasing a third property located at 704 South Alice Street, owned by Mary Bell Boulevard, and to discuss approving an offer on the 721 South Main Street property. 704 South Alice is directly behind 721 South Main Street, which is on the north side of Sonic Drive-In, and currently does not have a listing price, but does have a home on the property. After reconvening into regular session, the board approved letting Camilla Blum with Heritage Real Estate negotiate an offer on the 0.06-acre tract of land and approved an offer of $84,000 for the 721 South Main Street property. In June, MEDC purchased the home at 719 South Main Street, which is located next door to 721 South Main, from owner Maria Lujan for $87,000. Quote, "All properties will be investment properties, and as we are looking for new businesses moving into town, this is where they are looking for property, in the center of town where the traffic is. I am continuing research on the other properties in the area," MEDC Director Ashley Adalto said. County Commissioner Precinct 4 Eddie Nelms and his crew will assist MEDC with the demolition of the homes and clearing of the properties as time allows. In other business, the board approved the off-site water plans for commercial development on Block 26 with Maverick Engineering. The board previously approved the scope of work agreement with the company, and City Manager Rex Thee told the board, "It looks like a real good plan, and all that will have to be done in the future is make sure this is under an easement when the property is purchased." Maverick was tasked with engineering a water line through Block 27 and 26 to loop the water through to current engineering lines being developed by MEDC. The board also approved a Block 26 site observation report from Maverick Engineering. This is the final project with Maverick Engineering, as the board opted to move forward with Newton Engineering for future projects. In other approvals, the board approved a change order from Rubio's Paving for the off-site water for commercial development on Block 26 in the amount of $169,695 and an amendment to the construction contract. In final approvals, the board approved a revision of East Monahans' conceptual master plan, which shows the Law Enforcement Center, Kids Zone, along with the potential development along the interstate. Quote, "This shows what we would want to envision for the properties," Adalto said. Board member Leticia Rodriguez said, quote, "I think it would be good to put up a blown-up image of Block 26 on some signage to place on the property, which will help motivate and market to buyers," end quote. In regular business, the board approved the monthly director's report, accounts payable totaling $231,000, which included $203,000 for Rubio's Paving for Block 26, $6,900 for payroll and salaries, and $5,600 paid to Newton Engineering for for Block 25. $5,700 was paid to Maverick Engineering for Block 26 off-site water development. $6,800 was paid to Where on Earth Incorporated for property surveys. The financial report reflecting a balance of $3.6 million in available funds as of July 31st, and minutes of the July 15th meeting were approved. Directors present were Richard Irwin, Chad Beard, Leticia Rodriguez, Mary Elena Sines, and Kathy Anthony. Supermarket bandit who swiped over $400 in steaks arrested. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man turned himself into the Ward County Jail last week after Monahans Police Department say security cameras linked him to over $400 of stolen steaks from Lowe's Marketplace. Monahans Police Department officers were called to Lowe's Marketplace, located at 1201 South Stockton on July 29th, in reference to the theft which occurred the previous day. Quote, "Once on scene, the grocery store manager told officers a male subject, later identified as Michael Ray Gomez, age 55, of 1608 West 2nd Street, was observed bagging up 7 packages of ribeye steaks without scanning them at the self-checkout first on July 28th, Captain Stormy Law said. The total value of the steaks was approximately $465. The grocery store has security cameras throughout the store, and the store manager told officers, quote, "The meat market manager knew Gomez and was able to identify him as the subject on the surveillance footage," Law said. A warrant was issued for Gomez's arrest, charging him with theft of property, more than $100, less than $750. Officers attempted to make contact with Gomez at his residence, but were unable to locate him. Gomez subsequently turned himself in at the Ward County Jail on August 14th. His bond was set at $5,000, and Gomez paid the bond and was released.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.